Alex Friedman was a prisoner in Tennessee for 10 years, where he worked in a prison industry program. He is currently the associate editor of Prison Legal News and works against private prisons in Florida with the Private Corrections Institute. Alex joins us on the phone from Tennessee to talk to us about prison labor in the United States. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
So what type of work do prisoners do inside American prisons?
Generally, the vast majority of prisoners perform support work for the institutions. They provide the backbone of labor for the general operational day-to-day activities, including food service and food preparation in the kitchens, laundry, clothing. They provide grounds maintenance, they provide janitorial services and cleaning, and they often also supply some level of office support in terms of data entry or teacher's aid or working in the library. Virtually every job that needs to be done in a prison outside of security is done by prisoners. Also, of course, within prisons you have the industry programs. The industry programs are generally completely separate from the day-to-day or institutional operations and are specifically designed for the production of goods, whether for the government, a state-operated program, or for private industry.
So what are some of the differences for prisoners in these kinds of work?
The day-to-day operational work is generally the lowest paid wages. It's often busy work. In other words, it's to keep prisoners active and to reduce inmate idleness. It takes the vast majority of labor that otherwise would have had to be done by free world people in terms of janitorial or food service or laundry or grounds maintenance. So it reduces costs in prisons by using inmate labor for the benefit of the state. The industry programs, on the other hand, are generally much better paying jobs. The pay rate ranges usually from around 23 cents to $1.15 or $1.25 an hour. And they're considered premium jobs by prisoners because of the higher wages. They are the vast minority of jobs in prisons, though. Of the noted around 2.1 million people locked up in American prisons and jails, only around 75 to 77,000 those prisoners are employed in industry work programs. The vast majority of others are employed in institutional day-to-day regular prison jobs.
And what's the degree of voluntariness of those two programs?
The ordinary work programs in prisons are generally not voluntary. Prisoners who are able to work are often assigned to their jobs. Sometimes there are offices set up where they can apply or get on registers for different types of jobs within the prison setting. They primarily have to work, and some states have laws requiring prisoners to work if they're able to work. And if they refuse to work, they're disciplined, they're placed in segregation, solitary, they lose privileges until they agree to do the work that they were assigned to do. In some states, there are mandatory offices for job classification and to match prisoners up with work they're able to do and they're qualified to do. There's sometimes different tier levels of unskilled work where anybody could rake leaves or sweep dorm areas, or semi-skilled work, such as working in the kitchen or in horticulture, and then skilled work, such as doing office data entry for the prison administration. In Tennessee, for example, unskilled labor would pay $1 a day. Semi-skilled labor, around $2 a day, and skilled labor, the highest wage scale for ordinary prison jobs of $3 a day. Prison industry programs are somewhat different. The state-run industry programs are generally also considered mandatory work programs. Once the prisoner is placed in the industry state-owned work program, they're required to work in that program. That's generally not a problem or a large issue for most prisoners because those are much sought-after jobs because of the higher wages. There are often very long waiting lists to get into those industry programs. The only exception to the lack of voluntary work is the private industry programs called PI programs, or Prison Industry Enhancement Programs. And in those programs, work attendance is voluntary. Prisoners can sign up, but unlike any other prison job, they can quit and leave whenever they want without penalty. But again, because the PIVA programs are the most highest paid jobs in prisons, virtually everyone who is incarcerated and working in one of those programs has no reason or desire to quit. So there are built-in economic incentives that make it questionable whether that type of work is actually voluntary.
And you worked for a prison industry program in the mid-90s. Can you tell us more about that experience?
That's correct. I worked in a apparel T-shirt program that involved printing T-shirts in the prison grounds. It was in an industry building that had been leased out to a private company. And the company was under contract to produce large quantities of printed T-shirts, mostly for promotional use, and they also did some embroidery, textile embroidering work. The program was largely voluntary. There was a long waiting list for people who wanted to sign up for it. It paid minimum wage. The PIE industry programs are required by statute, federal statute, to pay prevailing wages for the area. In practice, however, primarily because most prisons are located in very rural areas, there are no comparable work programs that you can have prevailing wages compared with, and so it defaults to the federal minimum wage, which is generally what is paid in virtually all prison industry programs or PIE programs. This job paid minimum wage, and the wages were reduced by 80% for various deductions. Those deductions included room and board, a mandatory savings account, family support payments, and victims' restitution, which were automatically deducted along with all applicable federal and state taxes. So prisoners would take home, on average, maybe $1.50 to $2 an hour, which was an enormous amount of wages in terms of the prison culture. So it was a very attractive work assignment for that reason. One of the jobs that we did was, again, in the mid-90s, we had a contract to do promotional T-shirts for Taco Bell. So a lot of, this is true in general, a lot of companies in the U.S. use prison labor for their products. They don't necessarily know they're using prison labor because of how it's contracted out to various contractors and subcontractors.
So what happened to the program that you were involved in the mid-1990s?
That program actually folded and left the prison. They closed up their shop, and a different industry program was later moved in. I believe it was Wilson Sports, who had a industry operation that involved inflating basketballs for their goods that they would then sell in the U.S. Reasons for it shutting down weren't actually clear, but there are actually quite a few problematic issues with doing prison industry labor in prisons. A lot of free world companies benefit from the lower wages, and they benefit from subsidies from the state or federal governments, such as greatly reduced leasing or rental rates, sometimes as little as $1 a year to rent space in the prisons. The prisons grant these subsidies because they see it as a benefit, providing work programs for prisoners, for providing more jobs for prisoners, and reducing inmate idleness. But once industries get in there and actually begin working, they realize they have to comply with the various security requirements. They can't run shifts whenever they want to. There are numerous stoppages of work due to count times or lockdowns. There are requirements such as any trucks coming in or out of the facility can't come in except for it at certain times. And when they do come in, they're subject to a rather rigorous and lengthy search. So companies can't always operate on deadline. They're also somewhat of a transient workforce because prisoners do get released and do sometimes go to solitary and are removed from their workforce, and so they have to constantly train new people coming in. So due to some of those reasons, some prison industries don't make it.
So can you give us a big picture of what the prison industry programs look like?
Sure. On the national scale in the U.S., prison industry actually dates back quite a long ways. It dates back to the 1700s. In which the Walnut Street Jail in Philadelphia employed prisoners that were doing textile work, such as spinning yarn and so forth. From those humble beginnings, today we have a rather corporate business-like model of our prison industries. There are 50 PIE prison industry programs in 32 states. The largest prison industry program is the federal-run Bureau of Prisons, or BOP, Unicor program, which employs approximately 20,000 prisoners in 2005. And their wage scale maxes out at about $1.15 an hour for their workers. There are extremely large state-run prison industry programs in virtually every state. Some of the notable ones include the Texas Industry Program, the California Industry Program, and Florida's Pride Program, which is a state-run prison industry. There are approximately 75,000 prisoners working in industry programs in all U.S. prisons, and that's from 2005 from the National Correctional Industries Association. That is less than 5% of all U.S. prisoners. And we've really progressed to, a large profit-motivated business model. I say profit-motivated because most state-run prison industries are, in fact, not profitable, despite the fact that they use extremely reduced labor costs and that they often have a guaranteed market due to mandatory purchasing requirements, that they simply can't generate a profit, either due to ineptness or due to the security provisions that make working industry programs difficult, or the fact that they have little incentive to be successful because they have a guaranteed market and they're state-run.
In terms of some of the private companies, who are some of the companies that are involved in this work, and what happens to the goods that are produced by these companies?
Well, first I'll tell you a little bit about the state prison industries, because they are different. The state prison industries produce mainly office furniture. They produce food items, such as vegetables, dairy products, some meat, mostly to the prison system to make it more self-sufficient. They produce clothing and bedding. Some run fish farms. Some do data entry on a large scale for other federal or state government agencies. They do recycling programs, and they have print shops, produce road signs, and, of course, as everyone knows, they make license plates. That's one of the standard prison industries, state prison industries in the U.S. The private prison industries, to differentiate, are more involved in working in the private sector to produce goods and services for distribution to the main consumers. It's an end market. The state-run industries actually are not allowed by federal statute to produce goods across state lines, which is why almost all state prison industries sell only to state agencies within that state. So they're not in direct competition with private businesses that aren't using prison labor, although in effect they are, because if those goods and services were not being provided by state prisoners, and the state would have to purchase them from private businesses. So they are taking over some of the business that otherwise would be done in the private sector. The private industry programs involve things such as telemarketing, such as with TWA, packaging. A lot of companies' products are packaged, they might not know it, by prison labor, including products by Microsoft, Victoria's Secret, Taco Bell, Starbucks, Eddie Bauer. Also, apparel is a rather big industry for a private industry in prisons, such as T-shirts or a very famous program called Prison Blues that operates out of Oregon and which markets its products both nationally and internationally. Which brings up an interesting point. By law, the U.S. does not allow the importation of prison-made goods. And this has become a topic of discussion in regard to prison-made goods coming in from China to the United States, which are supposed to be barred from importation. However, the United States does not have a similar provision to allow export of our prison-made goods. And so, in the past, we have exported some of our prison labor-produced goods to Central and South America. We've done license plates for them. And also, Prison Blues, the Oregon program, exports its products to Japan, and also, I think, recently to Europe. So those are the main differences between the two types of prison industries, state versus private.
You work with Prison Legal News, and what is your position on these prison industry programs?
Prison Legal News is a national publication. We distribute our publication to subscribers in all 50 states and overseas. We report on legal issues and legal rulings primarily in the prison, jail, and criminal justice context. We also do news reporting on criminal justice issues, including issues such as disenfranchisement, some death penalty, prison industry, prison labor, prison privatization, pretty much everything involved in what's termed the prison industrial complex. Most of our full-time employees are ex-prisoners, and a great number of our writers are current prisoners. So we offer an inside perspective with direct personal empirical experience on the U.S. prison system. Our position on prison industry is that we do not particularly object as long as certain criteria are met. Those criteria would include, first, prison industry laborers need to be paid the prevailing market wage for their work, just like any other worker would be paid in the U.S. private sector. This would reduce the fact that prison labor unfairly competes with private business labor. Second, prisoners would have to be able to retain the money that they earn. The mandatory deductions, which are 80% reductions, are a disincentive for providing an effective industry program that prisoners can actually benefit from. The government giveth, but the government taketh away 80%. So we feel to be effective and to be fair in terms of wages to prison laborers, they have to retain the vast majority of their earnings, just like any other laborer in the U.S. private sector. And third is the transferability of skills. We believe that prison industries should involve job training components that actually teach and train prisoners in terms of marketable skills, so that once they're released, they can take those skills back out to the free world and they can use it to their own benefit. Some industry programs, for example, license plate manufacturer, train prisoners for work that is only available in prison. If you train a prisoner to make license plates, the only place he can use that skill is if he returns to prison to make more license plates. Other industry programs, such as the Wilson Sports Program that involves inflating basketballs, teaches absolutely no marketable skills. So we believe that industry programs, whether for the state or for the private sector, need to teach prisoners those skills they can use after they're released and should have a pre-release, post-release component where prisoners who have worked in those industry programs or provided job placement assistance to place them within those industries after they're released. If those conditions were met, we would have no objection to wider-scale prison industry programs.
And what are some other problems that you see with work inside prisons?
Part of it is part and parcel of a lot of other problems with prisons, such as there's very little transparency in prisons. Prison walls do not just keep prisoners in, they keep the public from looking in. And so there's a great amount of secrecy, and the public really does not know what happens, whether it's prison industry programs or other aspects of our criminal justice system. In the past, problems have arisen usually through whistleblowers, people who are willing to come forward to show that there's problems in prison industry programs. For example, recently, last month on April 3rd, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, an independent investigation arm of the U.S. government, reported to President Bush that they were recommending an independent investigation into computer recycling programs at around seven Bureau of Prison federal prisons that were run by Unicor, the Federal Prison Industry Program. They found that prisoners and correctional officers who were working in these programs were being exposed to toxic substances, to hazardous work conditions, and really nothing was being done about this, and that they requested an independent investigation so they can look at that a bit further. And some of the exposures were quite serious. They were being exposed to lead, cadmium, barium, and when they were recycling and breaking down computers without adequate safety gear. The federal agency that's supposed to oversee that is OSHA, and due to security requirements, they actually had to tell the prison, you know, over a week in advance prior to making their security inspection and their safety inspections. So there are certain problems with oversight of prison industry programs. Largely, they're run within prisons by the prison administration, and due to the inherent nature of secrecy and cover-up, quite frankly, of problems within prisons, you have very little monitoring of those programs from outside agencies. And an example of that is several years ago, a California industry program, CMT Blues, two prisoners came forward who were workers in that program to reveal that the program involved taking T-shirts that had Made in Honduras labels, removing the labels, and replacing them with Made in USA labels. And after reporting that to the media, the prisoners were then disciplined, transferred, placed in segregation. Even those prison industry programs that seem to be well-operated also can have problems that are not revealed unless there are such things as independent audits. The Pennsylvania prison industry program a year or so ago was found to be sitting on a $32 million stockpile of cash that appeared to indicate it was doing quite well. It later turned out, after an investigation, that they had obtained that money by vastly overcharging the state agencies it was selling to for prisoner-produced goods and services. So there are problems with prison industry programs that are not easily seen unless those programs are scrutinized and exposed to public the light of day so people can see into them.
Well, thanks very much for sharing some of that perspective on the prison labor industry in the United States.
I would like to make one additional comment, which is that prisoners are not, in general, opposed to prison industry programs, mainly because they pay such high wages. So there is an inherent compelling interest for prisoners to want to have those programs. It's not necessarily for their own benefit, but it does provide much higher wages, which is very desirable. The main opponents to prison industry programs are twofold. They're businesses and they are labor unions. Businesses see them as a direct threat, as do labor unions, to free world workers. And there have been cases where some free world businesses have simply fired their workers and moved their entire business behind prison walls.
So thanks very much again for speaking with us, Alex.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
We have been speaking with Alex Friedman. He worked in a prison industry program while he was a prisoner in Tennessee in the mid-1990s. And he's currently the associate editor of Prison Legal News. You can find more out about Prison Legal News at their website, prisonlegalnews.org. And if you're looking for more information on prison labor, there is a section in the book called Prison Nation, The Warehousing of America's Poor. It's edited by Paul Wright. He's also from Prison Legal News and edits it with Tara Harivel.